When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires. Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
Thanks for tuning in to the Drive On Podcast, where we talk about issues affecting veterans after they get out of the military. Before we get started, I'd like to ask a favor. If you haven't done so already, please rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts. If you've already done that, thank you. These ratings help the show get discovered so it can reach a wider audience. And while you're there, click the subscribe button so that you get notified of new episodes as soon as they come out. If you don't use Apple Podcasts, you can visit driveonpodcast.com/subscribe to find other ways of subscribing, including our email list. I'm your host, Scott DeLuzio, and now let's get on with the show. Hey, everybody. Today, my guest is a returning guest, Lonnie Hankins, who was back on episode 64, was a guest and talked about her time in the Army, her podcast that she had back then, her mental health, veteran suicide awareness, amongst other topics back in that episode. So if you haven't listened to that episode, episode 64 is titled Cruise Corner. Go back and give that episode a listen to find out a little bit more about our guest today. And today I'm having her back on the show to talk about her new book, which is titled Bottled Away, Confessions of a Struggling Veteran. So welcome back to the show, Lonnie.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. And before we started recording, I did kind of spill the beans a little bit about my somewhat selfish reason for having you on the podcast. I'm in the process of writing my own book, and I'd love to talk a little bit about the process that you went through to write your book. And again, it's not totally selfish because I do think that it could also be helpful to someone else who might be listening and has a story in the back of their head and they're thinking of writing it. They just don't know where to start, things like that. So it might be beneficial to some of the listeners as well. And I think that would be kind of a cool thing to talk about. But let's talk about your book first. Your book, The Bottled Away, Confessions of a Struggling Veteran. Let's talk about that and where that came from. What's the book all about? And what made you decide to write the book?
So we were actually just talking about it right before we started recording. I kept a lot of notes when I was in the military, and especially when I deployed, I kept a journal because I kind of wanted to annotate the day-to-day life stuff. I was just one of those people that was always really into psychology. And for whatever reason, it was like, I wanted to see how and if I changed in any way, and didn't really want to forget stuff. I'm pretty forgetful on my own. So it was like, I just want to just kind of jot some stuff down and hold on to it. And so I had that journal, and I had tons of letters that I had mailed home to my mom when I was in basic, when I was deployed, AIT, all that stuff. So I had just all this paperwork and all these notes. And I started briefly sharing it when I first came out with Cruise Corner through the podcast and the blog. And I realized I couldn't really cut my story down to 5-minute posts. I just couldn't do it. I talk too much. I write too. There's just too much there. And I felt like I was almost censoring myself by trying to just consolidate all this work into these little tiny intros where I just had to get to the point. And I couldn't always just get to the point without feeling like I cut out a lot of the story. And so I just got this idea, especially when the pandemic started, because I had a lot of time, that I just started putting these notes together and building this story with the idea that I knew I wasn't some like badass soldier when I was in. I had probably the average person story. I was a supply clerk. I worked in a PLL office at the motor pool. But when I started struggling with transition, I noticed there weren't stories that I felt like I could relate to. And you had to be that badass war person, like warrior or whatever, and have all these like Hollywood worthy stories. And I couldn't find it. I just realized I felt bad. And I felt bad like these people I was reading about, but our stories were nowhere near each other. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I'm going to go ahead and just put my story out there and hope it encourages more people to speak up for those of us that didn't have the crazy combat story, didn't have all these crazy things happen, but we still struggled. And so I thought, well, if I could do it for the little people, maybe we could all people, there are a lot of people that were ashamed of having PTSD or having a rough transition because they didn't feel like they were allowed. And so it's right. We're so complex of people. Like there's so many things that happen in life. Maybe if I do this, other people will do this. And maybe some civilians will learn in the process, like it's not all Black Hawk Down. It's not platoon. Right. it's like
exactly something. And that's a great point too, that you brought up by saying that your time in the military was pretty average. It wasn't, that this extraordinary thing that, you hear of all these heroics that happen, but those are the ones that get the media attention and the publicity and all that sort of stuff, because they're exciting and they're fascinating. They're interesting. And so, of course they're going to talk about that because it gets the clicks to the websites. It gets the views on television. It gets the seats in the movie theaters and all that kind of stuff. Those are the exciting things, but they are sort of outliers. They don't happen to everybody. Yeah. And I like that you're putting yourself out there and telling your story, even though in your words, it's an average story. It's not, something that you feel is extraordinary, which I would question that, but that's maybe a different conversation.
I'm a pretty tough critic on my own stuff. So, I mean, I know there's definitely people that have read it already. They're like, wow, that's rough. Like,
right.
But I still see it as being a very common story. And okay. So I think a lot of people could relate to different sides to it. Even me being a female veteran, I feel like there's things I went through that everybody can relate to in the military. The long time away from home, the separation, mm-hmm. feeling like you leave your life behind. And when you come back, you're just supposed to jump into it like you were never gone. Like there's other issues that kind of chip away at you that nobody really talks about, or not enough people talk about, or the ones that do talk about it have those awesome stories of like all this stuff they did in combat. So it kind of like overshadows that. So people are like, oh, that's rough, but dude, the stuff you went through was crazy. Like, so it just kind of gets shuffled off to the side.
And one of the things that the average person who maybe never served in the military or doesn't know anybody who served in the military, all they really know about the military is the Black Hawk Down and platoon and Full Metal Jacket and those types of movies. That's really all they know about. And so, in the back of their mind, they're probably thinking, okay, everybody who I meet who's a veteran probably is a little bit messed up in their head because like they went through all of this crazy war stuff and it's just insane. But you're shedding light on the other side of the service too, where it's not jumping out of helicopters and or airplanes or being blown up and shot at 24 hours a day, 7 days a week for the entire course of your deployment. There's another side of it. There are lots of other jobs in the military that don't get highlighted. And I think it's great that someone like yourself is highlighting these other jobs that are maybe not quite as glamorous. They don't get the media attention, the pomp and circumstance or whatever you want to call it. But you're talking about your story. So I think that's great. So tell us a little bit about the story and what a little bit about your story and a little bit about your background that went into this book.
So really it just sort of starts off explaining why I left for the military in the first place, because when I had the blog, it was already just talking about what the Army turned me into. There was no baseline of who I was before it all. And so it kind of just starts off just being kind of that college kid. I was in school for an art degree and didn't really know what I was doing. It was starting to turn into the Van Wilder story. I was just hanging out at community college and I didn't have any direction. And I was a surfer kid because I grew up in Central California. And so I was just kind of wasting time. Mm-hmm. And I didn't join until I was 22 and was really excited about it. I thought I was going to go in and be a lifer. I had a lot of goals to become a warrant officer. I had a lot of family that had been in the military. So I just kind of wanted to kind of get that under my belt like everybody else did. And I had grandfathers in World War II, an aunt that was a WAC when she was in World War II. My dad was a Vietnam vet. And so I thought like, oh, I'm going to do it too. And then just right off the bat, within the first 6 months of being in the military, I experienced stuff like MST, a lot of harassment. And it was not what I remembered it being in the movies, because I went in with the idea of like G.I. Jane. And right. Like, oh, you know, if you just try really hard, they're going to accept you. But it doesn't really work that way. And so I was a little naive, or pretty naive, going in. And so it just goes to show that, like, you can be as motivated as you want, and one little thing can throw it off course. And it got thrown off pretty quick. And so my military service, even though it was ended up being far shorter than I intended, I was only in for 6 years, four of which were active. It was always a lot of combating battles within myself, trying to move on past trauma, trying to remain part of the team, be seen as one of the guys, always kind of pushing away females because I felt like if you're close to the women, you're going to be a target because, I mean, I was attached to a cavalry unit, so mostly around the guys. So that was who you wanted to get along with. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of other stuff that kind of fed into why I left so early. So the book just kind of shows how my mental state got to where it was, where the transition was bound to be tough, and how I'd put a lot of it away, the whole military mentality of like kind of bottle it up, push it down and keep going, assault forward, like just let it go. And get over it. And so you suppress a lot of stuff. And when I got out, my biggest issue was I got bombarded with all these old things that I'd never dealt with. And so it was just kind of like this rocky transition out, figuring out who I was outside the uniform and basically how I survived myself once I didn't have the Army anymore, when I didn't have my buddies anymore.
And that is... Well, it's probably not as common of a story as you're making it out to be. There's definitely more to it, probably even that you're talking about right now. But if people want to know the story, they have to go out and buy the book, which there will be links to the book in the show notes and everything. You can find the book there. But it's definitely... There's definitely more to the story, I think, than you give it credit for. But that's, I think, one of the things about the military is we don't tend to want to brag too much about ourselves. You know, we'll lift other people up, but we'll be slow to take the praise or, you know, lift ourselves up. And I think that's, maybe a little bit of what we're seeing here with this. So I think there's definitely more to it than what you're letting on. So when you started writing this book, you said you had a bunch of just notes basically from your time in the
notes,
service.
Letters, everything.
And what was the process like of actually putting all that random stuff that was basically put together with no real purpose other than just, to keep your memories in line and writing letters back home or to whoever. What was the process of organizing all of that stuff like?
Well, the blog made it easier because I was able to divide it kind of into just topics. I had stuff to talk about PTSD, the transition part, deployment, suicide, losing buddies, stuff like that. And, in terms of the notes, I kind of went along the same line, like where's the common denominator in each story or each note? Like, okay, this kind of feeds into the PTSD. This feeds into dealing with like pharmaceuticals in the military, how much they kind of pump you full of that. I just found things that were kind of like, they would explain certain things. And so it took me well over a year of just figuring out and then restructuring and just making sure stuff flowed and things explained the next thing and led into it. So, I mean, the system, I think it just took a lot of editing just to make sure.
Yes.
'Cause when you tell your own story, you can fill in the blanks, even if you're not reading it. So your head's putting it through. So I'd have to kind of put myself in someone else's shoes. Like, would that make sense?
Right.
Because, or how far do I explain this? Because I did touch on, even though like my full story is not the real like common thing, like no one has the story I do, but the topics, the suicide, feeling it either yourself or losing someone to it, the post-traumatic stress, how far do I go into explaining these things to where it's not just a trigger book the whole time, like just
right,
because it's like there's gonna be people that dealt with that same thing. It's not like how far do I have to go to make a point. And that was really the hardest part, was trying to kind of draw back, don't go too far into it, just make the point, but still enough to show why this would be so hard to cope with.
Yeah, enough so that someone who has no idea what you're talking about, who they haven't lived that or experienced it, they can follow along and know what you're talking about. But then at the same time, like you said, not to be a trigger book and have it, you know, make people not want to read past the first page, you know, yeah. when they're getting triggered left and right with you know, the detail, level of detail that you might be going into it. And as far as the publishing process, are you self-published the book? Is that correct? Or
yeah,
did you have a publisher?
Published.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. I went that route. I know it's, you know, if you go the author route, that's kind of the dirty word of saying like, oh, I self-published, because other people right. are like, oh, you know, but to me, it was this idea of, I wanted it to stay my voice. I wanted it to stay my story. I didn't want to change it for someone that wouldn't really understand it the way I did. I right. wrote it, intended it to be exactly as it was. I mean, hours and hours and hours of editing. I mean, I'm a perfectionist, so it definitely got to that point where it's like, you have to let it go. Like, I could have
it's good
till the end of my life. Like, I could have just always found something wrong with it. But it was at that point where I wanted this to really remain mine. And I didn't go into this with this idea of like, I'm going to get rich, I'm going to get famous. It was like, this is to just, even if it's one person, this is mm-hmm. to help somebody. And so I felt like by self-publishing, it allowed me to do with it as I intended, and to not try to make myself out to be this huge person or have someone trying to pump it up. It was like, I'll let people read this when they're ready. And I was lucky enough to meet another veteran that had actually introduced me to the Amazon KDP process. And that's how I was able to realize that I could self-publish. Because I thought my biggest issue was, I wrote the book, what do I do with it now? Like, right. how do I get it out there? And I had talked to other authors, and the feedback I always got was, if you're not rich, you're not going to publish. Like, you better have a lot of money. And it kind of made me mad with that, this idea of like, I'm too poor to tell my story. Like,
right.
No, like there's got to be another way. And so I ended up reading a book. It was like 100 ways or 100 days to write a book, 100-page book, something like that. But it basically just explained the KDP process through Amazon, which was really self-explanatory. If you go through mm-hmm. Amazon, Barnes & Noble does it too. There's actually a lot of self-publishing things out there. But it was just like, it made it attainable. And so it was this idea of like, that was my motivation to actually go through with doing the book, like all the way, and not just writing it and then sitting on it for the end right. of time.
Yeah. And I actually talked to somebody a couple months ago who actually helps people who write books, you know, get some publicity, sort of a publicist, but not exactly. And they said that one of the authors that they were helping had gotten published through a publisher, and they said that the biggest benefit to going through a traditional publisher is that they're able to get the books on the shelves in the bookstores, so Barnes & Noble and Target and Walmart and other
yeah.
other places that people traditionally will buy a physical copy of a book. But with the coronavirus, with a lot of these things either locked down or with people just not willing to go out to the store and they're turning to Amazon or they're turning to other online sources, they're not selling the books. And this one author in particular that they had been talking about said that they had an order through Barnes & Noble for like 5,000 copies of their book, and it got slashed down to like 300 copies because nobody's going to the bookstores and buying the books these days. So to your point of, you know, how, you know, the difference between traditional publishing and self-publishing, I think like these days you might not even necessarily want to go the traditional publishing route because not only do they take a cut of your sales and also, you know, maybe chop up some of the book and, you know, make it not be what you want it to be. There's not really a whole lot of benefit to it at this point.
That was the other big thing, was if I didn't have a middleman really in there, I was trying to keep the price down. Right. And because like through Amazon, that price, some people are like, why isn't it free if you care so much about people reading your stuff? But the issue with it is you do pay printing costs. You do pay, like, there's taxes, there's stuff like that. So that has to come out of something. If it was free, I'd basically be paying people to, every time they buy a book, I have to go throw $5-6 down to have it just printed out. And so a lot of what you're paying for it, even through Kindle, like, it's, there's a printing, there's a distribution cost, there's all these other things that go into getting this book out there. And I had considered, like, well, do I want to find it on a shelf? I would love to walk into a Barnes and Noble and see my stuff on a shelf. But I also understood that Amazon has like 80% of the market when it comes to books. And so it's like, it's probably not going to end up on a shelf anyways, even if I want to try to go through like a mom and pop kind of shop or something like that, or I want to see it in a library. And I know my book is not going to be on a school library. It's like, there's too many disclaimers on that. It's not going to be. And so you have to look at the market. Like, if Amazon is 80% of the market, where am I going to find the most people that are going to actually have access to this book? And you can make it shareable so that people, if you get the Kindle version, you can share it and they can loan it to somebody and stuff like that. Like, it gives you a lot of freedom, and all the way down to the cover design. Everything about like the printed version and the Kindle version, that I designed it, I did everything. It's all my stuff. Everything was just me sitting there playing with the whole system. I'm not tech savvy whatsoever, so I can promise you, if I figured it out, you can too. Like, it is pretty, they do a pretty good job of step-by-step stuff. So,
well, that's good. And, you know, so people who might be considering writing their own book, you know, and then worried that it's just going to fall on deaf ears because, you know, if they don't have a way of publishing it and getting it out to people, then, you know, what's even the point? But there's always that option of, going through Amazon, and like you said, it's step by step, and it's a pretty easy process to go through. And, as far as things like, your cover design and other things like that, if you don't have the design chops to figure that out on your own, you can probably find somebody on like Upwork or Fiverr or something like that to put something together for you. And it really wouldn't be that all that expensive to do. And, you know, a decent looking cover, you know, because let's face it, most people do judge a book by its cover.
Absolutely.
And, you know, a decent looking cover could totally help with your sales of your book. So I have a feeling that's probably going to be the way that I end up going, is, my graphic design skills are not the best. And so I'll probably have, somebody help me with that, but we'll cross that bridge when we get there. For the people who are out there kind of on the fence, or they might have a story to tell. It might be the next Black Hawk Down type of story, or it might be the next average Joe, Jane, whatever story that they don't think is maybe important enough to tell. What advice might you have for the other vets who are out there who do have a story? Because all of us do. We can talk about our time in the service, and it will be interesting to somebody. Maybe not to everybody, but it'll be interesting to somebody. What advice do you have for them to, as far as telling their story?
Well, I think what you just said, the key word in that is somebody. Someone's going to get something from it. And so for me, I was horrified of the idea of putting some of the stuff I was going to put out there just for everyone to judge and tear apart if they wanted to. But it was this idea of, if I could just make a difference for one person, and if we were all doing that every day, because I always go back to like the 22 veterans a day, if we were all just doing something to help somebody else out, that's, you're making a difference. And so I thought, you know, there's got to be at least one person that can relate to my story in some shape or form, that maybe this will encourage them to maybe not write a book. I mean, that's a scary thought for some people. Like, that's not right. Therapy. It's therapy for me. That's for some people, that's a big no-no. But the idea that you can open up and it's going to be received by someone, it, you know, you're not going to be by yourself. Someone will stand by you. It was just this idea of like, if one person gets something out of this at the end of the day, I didn't suffer for nothing. I didn't go through all this for no reason. And that for me was the biggest motivating factor, that I don't know who it's going to help, but there's got to be somebody out there that this can do something for at the end of the day.
Yeah, absolutely. And even looking at the older generations, World War II generations, as the numbers of the veterans from that era are slowly dwindling. You know, think about all of the stories that just went untold. Even the average stories, that, you know, it doesn't matter. All of the stories that just went untold and now are lost to history because those people are gone. That's another, I think, another reason to tell your story is for historical purposes, even if it's for no one more than your own kids, or, you know, even grandkids who are like, you know, what did grandma or grandpa do in, you know, when they were in the military, you know, your story is now out there for them to know about. I know my grandfather was in the Navy in World War II, and he was at Iwo Jima. He was, a lot of stuff happened. I know next to none of it he died when I was young enough to not really understand the significance of it. And my God, if I could have him back for an hour now to just sit him down and talk about it, that would be amazing. But you know, that's obviously not a possibility, but you know,
that was something I even mentioned in the book, was that aunt I had that was part of the Women's Army Corps during World War II. I had mentioned that she was a big reason why I wrote, because all those women that served in WAC, women were still up to like the 1970s having a hard time with the military. Like, you weren't recognized for the benefits. You could get kicked out for the littlest thing, like getting married or having a kid. And a lot of them didn't talk about their service because it wasn't well received. And so I thought about how many stories she had that nobody knows, a whole generation of women vets that didn't really feel like they could talk about it or that nobody would care. My dad died May, I think it was 2020, of complications with Agent Orange. Lots of stories I don't know from his time in Vietnam, and just how, like, the tidbits of like how they were treated when they came back. And it really did become this idea of like, nobody can take this book away from me once it's out there, this story. Right. And so, and I might forget it completely one day. Like, I don't know, like, I might not even remember it anymore, but it's there. And it's this little time capsule. And so there were a lot of people that I thought, like, the amount of stories that go untold because people either feel like they don't have a story worth telling, or someone convinced them to just stay quiet about it. That was a big thing, was hoping to encourage other people to not let this generation at least go, just kind of disappear and go to the grave. Like, I just wanted people to know what we go through. We all have such different stories, and the more of us that tell them, the more it covers.
Exactly. Yeah. I want to read a quote of yours from a post that you put up on Instagram, if you don't mind. This was, I know I'm kind of springing this on you. I didn't tell you I was going to do this, but so you said a few years back, I had an idea, started with a blog, and I received harsh criticism for sharing my struggles, but I kept sharing. When I decided to move the blog to a podcast, I was told I didn't have anything worth talking about, but I kept talking. And when I decided I wanted to write a book, another author told me publication was only for the wealthy, but I kept writing. I pushed on because even though I don't have a glamorous story, I believe my experiences with trauma and hardships were not unique. I knew I wasn't the only one suffering, and I knew if I could just help just one person, that I was, that was one more person that would choose to see tomorrow. No matter how badass or mundane your story is, we can all learn something from one another. We take what we can use, then pass the wisdom onto others and let them decide what they can take from it. My story may not be the one people are looking for, but at the least, I hope my journey encourages others to open up rather than to continue bottling the pain away. And honestly, this is me now. This is not you, your quote. I don't think you need any more reason than that to tell your story in whatever format you choose, whether it's writing a book, starting a podcast, writing it in a journal. It doesn't have to be a published book or anything, or just sitting your kids down and telling your story, or your wife or your husband or whoever. I think that's, I mean, that was so well put, that I wanted to include that, that message. And, you know, again, I don't think you really need any better reason than that.
Yeah. My big thing was always just that, don't let people convince you that you can't do something that's making you feel better. For me, it was always writing. It was the only way I could get it out. I'm a pretty quiet person, so just opening up and talking about it. The podcast for me was really coming out of my comfort zone because it was asked for. So I was trying to do it for other people because people were like, I don't want to read. Will you read it to me? And so like it kind of evolved from the people that didn't want to go read the blog or whatever. But my biggest thing was with like the whole bottled away, it's not just stacking all those memories and traumas and stuff inside yourself until the point where you just explode. It's, you got to get it out somehow, and everybody's going to find their outlet, but the key in it is finding an outlet to not just carry it with you. It's a heavy weight, especially if you get out of the military and you don't have your battle buddies around anymore. Like when we're in the service together, we disperse the weight. We all help each other carry it. When you end up alone, I ended up alone after the service, and it was a lot, and nearly lost myself over it. And so I didn't want other people to feel like you just have to hold it all in until you can't do it anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. And for the people who are maybe struggling with trying to figure out how to let it out and tell their story. I had another guest on the podcast a few weeks ago, and she was talking about how she uses artwork. And she makes these clay, pottery and things like that. And her story is told through that, the artwork. And when, she puts it out there, people will start to ask her, you know, at a, you know, exhibit, art exhibit type of thing, people will start to ask her, so what was the motivation behind this particular piece or whatever? And then it just starts flowing out of her story. She starts telling her story, and this is where it came from and all that. So the way you tell your story can look different, but the fact that you're telling your story doesn't necessarily change. And I think that that's really the important piece there.
Yeah. It's a really good icebreaker, whether it's art or writing or whatever. Cause for me, like the book's out there. So it's just like, I don't feel like I have to explain so much anymore. It's like, here it is. Like, cause I got tired of explaining why I felt bad as a supply clerk. Like, because a lot of it didn't have to do with healing. It was trying to convince people I was allowed to feel as bad as I did. And so what I couldn't write, I did start with art, and it was just another way to show there was pain. And so it did become that icebreaker where people like, okay, well, clearly that's not a normal painting. There's some issues there. So what's going on? And it's like, well, you know, But that's kind of what the writing was for me. It's kind of just unfiltered. You're left alone to do it on your own time. You're not, that's where the writing has been easier than podcasting. Podcasting, I had people that kind of fought back at what I would say. So you couldn't ever really just say your story. Right. And for me, it was like, just get it all out. Let me just say what I got to say and then judge it. Like, then come to your conclusions. Just let me say why I feel bad. And so again, like whatever it takes to get you to just be able to open up or to help you tell that story. That's what I think everybody needs. That it saves right. lives. I mean, save me
for sure. Yeah. And it's because things like the traditional talk therapies and things like that are not for everybody. They don't work for everybody. Exactly. And they, not to say that there's anything wrong with them with those particular types of therapies. They do work for some people, and they're the ones that they work for, they're great. And it's wonderful, but there's other ways of expressing yourself, and there's other ways of getting things off your chest and getting it out there. And so don't be discouraged if you've tried a bunch of different talk therapies. There's a whole slew of different things that you could try. If that doesn't work, there's something else out there for you. So don't get discouraged. Don't give up. Keep on.
Gotta find the right fit.
Yeah, exactly. Find the right fit and keep on moving forward.
It's not a one size fits all thing when it comes to therapy. Like there's, and from my own experience, it was a collection of things. Like it was not just one thing worked. I had to kind of create a whole lifestyle around it. A whole bunch of sustainable things that like just added to being able to heal. So it took getting outside, leaving the house once in a while, getting your thoughts out, you know, like eating better, something. Like it's just a whole collection of things.
And as hard as it may be to get out of bed and leave the house some days, which I know is a hard thing to do for a lot of people, where, you know, they're suffering from depression or PTSD, and they don't want to do anything. They don't want to go anywhere. They don't want to see anyone or talk to anyone. But sometimes just forcing yourself to do that one thing. You know, there's the theory of, you know, just make your bed and, you know, start the day off right. And just do accomplish that one little thing. Yeah.
Get
that momentum. Exactly. Then go out and do that next little thing. And even if everything else goes wrong, at least your bed's made when you come back to bed at night, and you're that much better for it. And then the next day, do it all over again and see how much better you can make yourself.
Just to like kind of continue what you were just saying.
Cause
I was definitely one of those people that had a hard time getting myself out of bed and getting myself to just do daily stuff. My big advice is something I did was I would leave notes up around the house where I'd see them about kind of like affirmations or things that hit me on track. Cause I'm one of those people that I get in my head real easy, and I can talk myself out of anything, and I can make any situation worse. So it was one of those things to keep myself from doing that and to remind myself why I had to keep going, why I needed to take a shower that day, why I needed to do something as like simple as go sit outside for 5 minutes in the sun or something. Because I could talk myself out of doing those things, even though I knew they were important. So I think the biggest thing is just to find that thing that's going to keep you out of your head sometimes, because we can be our own worst enemies. And to not, just like you wouldn't let somebody else take away something you love to do or talk you out of doing something that means a lot, we can't do it to ourselves either. So
that's a great point. You know, whether it's finding reasons to do those things, or even if that reason is for someone else, like I don't want to let my kids down or my spouse down or something like that, like that could be reason enough to, you know, keep moving. And you know, ideally you'd like to find the internal reason, like why is this? I want to be a better person. I want to better myself. But do what you got to do to just keep moving forward. And that's something, you know, I've struggled with. I think a lot of people have struggled with is finding those reasons to keep moving forward and keep on going. And it's once when you find those reasons and you you get into a habit of doing these things, it gets a little bit easier to add one more thing, to go outside for more than 5 minutes, to go to the store, to take a shower, even, you know?
Yeah.
So I think those little steps will eventually lead to bigger steps, and they may seem like complete crap because of all the other stuff that you've done. You know, you may have been deployed and done the badass stuff, and you're now struggling to take a shower every day. Like, it might seem like it's complete crap, but
I think there's a reason that we have to learn to do is to cut ourselves some slack.
Yes.
Really rough on ourselves or something like that. Cause I was like that, like, God, I feel like I want to cry today, but I used to be in Afghanistan. Why can't I deal with like washing the dishes today? Like, you know, it was just kind of like, we are a human. We're allowed to have rough days. We're allowed to break down. It's just not getting stuck there. Like,
yeah,
you know, you have to just cut yourself some slack once in a while for having like a human response or feeling emotion or something like, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's absolutely true. We're human, and we have normal human reactions to abnormal situations that we get put into. And the military, unfortunately, puts us into a lot of abnormal situations, especially, you know, when it comes to deployments and things like that. There's nothing normal about a lot of the stuff that we do. And you definitely have to cut yourself some slack, have a little grace, and, you know, rest, relax, come back better and stronger, but don't try to keep going at 1,000 miles an hour, because it's not going to work out.
Burnout's real. Like, it
is.
It's hard to come back from too. The more you do it, the more you neglect yourself, the harder it is to come back from it all. So
yeah. And one of the things that I recently found out or kind of discovered is how cyclical some of this stuff is, because sometimes when you're feeling down, it's easier to just withdraw and isolate away from other people and not go out and not get out of bed, or, you know, to just do those kind of self-isolating type of practices. But that gives you like an immediate fix for the feeling down, because then you're not worried about going out and all the other things that might come along with it. But at the same time, not being around other people brings you down even more. And then the next day you're just going to keep doing it and doing it and doing it. And because it's the easy fix, it's the, you know, it's the quick fix to a longer term problem. And it really does take some work and dedication to keep going. And so,
For sure.
It's not easy. It's not easy a lot of times to do this, but you do have to keep fighting and keep moving forward. So
yeah, absolutely.
Well, Lonnie, it has been a pleasure speaking with you and talking about your book and a little bit about your story. I want to give you a second here to tell people where they can go to follow you and your story and find out more about your book and where to get it.
So in terms of following me, I'm still on Cruise Corner through Instagram. It's still the KRUSE_corner. Don't have the website anymore. But if you wanted to look for the book, it's on Amazon. Just put in Bottled Away, Confessions of a Struggling Veteran in the search bar. It should pop up. It's Kindle. It's a print version. So either or. But that's about it for me. I've kind of cut back on the social media stuff, so I don't have a whole lot of contact stuff anymore, but that's probably the main thing to get a hold of me on is Instagram.
Yeah, perfect. And I will have links to both of those in the show notes, and so anyone looking to buy the book, please do go out and buy the book, paperback, Kindle version, whichever you prefer. That will help get Lonnie's message out there, help maybe you, if you're struggling with a similar situation that Lonnie had gone through in her military service, even if you're just feeling like your service was mundane and average, like Lonnie was saying that hers was, and you want to maybe give yourself some little inspiration to say that maybe it wasn't quite as average as you think it was. You know, go out and get that book and give it a read, and also review it, because that, I'm sure that helps with getting the book found on Amazon as well. So do that, help out Lonnie, help out other veterans who will then find her book. So with that, thank you again, Lonnie, for joining me and sharing everything that you did today.
Thank you for having me on again. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to the Drive On Podcast. If you want to check out more episodes or learn more about the show, you can visit our website, driveonpodcast.com, or on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Drive On Podcast.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.